Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to 2 of the First. It is June the 6th, 2023. I'm Ryan Balgi. Good to have you here with us. Hope you had a great weekend. We've got a lot to talk about, a couple of stories to talk about. Well, we've got a lot to work through, so we'll probably work through a litany of more than two topics, but we've got two main ones for you, and we will start with golf's longest day, which is one of my favorite days of the year. It is yesterday's final qualifying for the U.S. Open. 10 sites around the country held qualifying events. These are 36-hole qualifying events where they whittle a field that started from entries of 9,500 players or so, an amazing number of players who wanted to compete in the U.S. Open this year. And they whittle them down through local qualifying events. Those are 18-hole events. Then about 560-ish players get through those local qualifying events. They advance to final qualifying. And all told, you've got different players from backgrounds of PGA Tour players or mini tour players or accomplished amateur players. There are lots of different ways to get exempt also into the final qualifying stage. It used to be called the sectional stage. Now it's called final qualifying. And they had set aside, the USGA did, 63 spots in total between these 10 qualifiers. Yesterday were for 45 spots. And then the 18 spots they had in three other qualifiers they've already held. So they held one in Japan, one in England at Walton Heath, and then one in the Dallas area, which they've done for a number of years now, where they've tried to have a pre-qualifying day qualifier for American-born players for the most part, and they've held it in Texas for a while. So they've been trying to kind of build this up with some pre-momentum to have an overseas one again in England. They hadn't had one for a few years. They've been doing a money list, points list kind of thing with the DP World Tour to get players in. They still have a smaller version of that this year. That'll be phased out, and they'll go back to the qualifying because that was a product of the pandemic. The one in Japan will stay. That one's been pretty cool to have the last number of years that they've been able to have it, and that date predates the pandemic. And then, again, the one in Texas. So we've got a lot of familiar sites from the 10 that we had yesterday. The locations are pretty familiar. The courses may move around a little bit. There was a great one yesterday at Hillcrest Country Club in Los Angeles, which is one of the kind of big five private clubs in the LA area. From what I understand, it's an incredible place. All the top five clubs are. That includes Riviera, LACC, Bel Air, Wilshire. I mean, these are the biggest, big money clubs in one of the biggest cities in the world. And a really cool event. But there were five players who got out of that qualifying, and you got Omar Morales, Barclay Brown, two amateurs who won the 36-hole event, along with David Puig, who plays on LIV Golf. There were four golfers who compete on LIV that got out of sectionals. Charlie Hoffman got in, Preston Summerhays got in. Pretty awesome. And actually, that's a 3-for-2 playoff, so that may not be exactly correct, but I'm pretty sure that's going to wind up being the case. Then you've got Tacoma Golf and Country Club, or Tacoma Country and Golf Club. That's a tongue twister. Up in Washington, they have a Pacific Northwest qualifier. It's usually one of the smaller ones. 54 players, two spots. They assign these spots based on the quality of the field and the number of players in the field. So you had 89 players at Hillcrest. You had 54 at Tacoma. And most of these players are not professionals. They're not, or at least they're not PGA Tour level professionals. Jesse Shutt and Alex Yang got in there. Really cool to, I mean, get through. First of all, Alex Yang's an amateur player. But for these players who don't get PGA Tour access, and maybe they're either collegiate players or amateur players, I mean, this is a big day for them. This is a huge day, especially if you're qualifying for your first one. And Tacoma, of the qualifying sites, was arguably the most difficult, if not second most difficult. 3 under, they both shot for 36 holes, got them into the U.S. Open. Springfield Country Club is in Springfield, Ohio. It is actually kind of the alternate slash spillover site for the one that happens in Columbus, which is really meant for the PGA Tour players. It's supposed to be the hardest one, but it's also supposed to be convenient because it's right after the Memorial. Springfield Country Club is the alternative, and some players have picked that because they feel like going against a smaller field, even with smaller spots, against a weaker field is better for them. So you had Springfield Country Club, 75 players, 5 spots, Sam Stevens, Taylor Pendrith, Nick Hardy, Alex Shake, and Dylan Wu. Last two got through in a playoff. There's a really cool social media video of one of Shake's friends watching him make the putt, I think live on Golf Channel as they were streaming some of these or showing some of these playoffs for him to get in. A really cool moment. If you can check that out on Twitter, check it out. Wintmott Country Club here in the D.C. area in Rockville, Maryland. Great club. Has hosted the U.S. Women's AM, that great finale a couple of years ago. And that's been long been a spot for qualifying. It's kind of the Mid-Atlantic qualifier site. And there were 60 players for 4 spots. A good mixture of a couple of live guys, Mark Leishman, Seb Munoz, who wound up getting through in a playoff, some amateur players, some collegiate players, Ben Coles, who has been crushing it on the Corn Ferry Tour this year, actually is good friends with Denny McCarthy, who wound up losing the playoff for Memorial. His family's based here. He stayed here in the area. Denny plays out of our club, but Ben was in the area. It was actually using not a staff bag so he could, you know, carry, because you don't have to have a caddy for these qualifying events. So 4-under-1 here, Carl Phillips, who's an amateur, Isaac Simmons, an amateur, Michael Brennan got through in a playoff, and Seb Munoz, as I mentioned, got through a 3-under. Mark Leishman did not. Michael Brennan hit an incredible, incredible shot to get up and down in the playoff to make a par that got him through to the U.S. Open. If you can watch the video of that, I highly recommend it, because you will not believe what he accomplished from like a buried, awful, face of the bunker vertical lie to be able to get through. The main event for most of these years of qualifying is in Columbus, Ohio, as I mentioned. This year, it's Brookside Golf and Country Club and the Lakes Golf and Country Club. In past years, it's been Scioto Country Club, or over at the Ohio State University has hosted. This year, it's these two sites together, and 103 players, 11 spots. Interesting list, actually. A lot of the big names that you probably thought would get through didn't necessarily get through, but here's that group. Olin Brown Jr., 111 under to be medalist. Davis Thompson, Eric Cole, Nico Echevarria, Corey Pereira, not Mito, Luke List, Patrick Rogers, Stuart Sink getting it done, and he's been playing a little bit on the PGA Tour Champions. Did really great in his debut, I think it was debut, in the Senior PGA Championship. And then the playoff, Kevin Streelman got through, Nick Dunlap is an amateur, and David Nightfall got through. They were all an 8-under to get in that playoff. There were 3 spots available in a Canadian qualifier, 27 players. So for the players that were in Canada for the RBC Canadian Open and then wanted to do it that way, 3 guys got through. Ryan Gerard's been having a great year on the PGA Tour, building up status. Vincent Norman and Ryan Armour. Boynton Beach, Florida, Pine Tree Golf Club, 51 players, 3 spots. Austin Trenslow, Brendan Valdez, who is an amateur player, Carlos Ortiz, who plays on LIV, got through in the playoff. He was the only playoff player to get through for 3 spots. Hawks Ridge Golf Club, Ball Ground, Georgia. Gordon Sargent got through with ease in the 43-player event for 3 spots. The guy who hits it 10 million miles out of Vanderbilt and was really an attraction at the Masters, and they didn't play particularly well. 1 on 13 under. Kyle Mueller, J.J. Gray were the other two to get through there. Canoe Brook Country Club, Summit, New Jersey. 67 players for 4 spots. This is usually an interesting one because it's put on by the Met section, and they attract some really interesting players. Some regional guys are very good. A lot of amateurs take this one up. Michael Thorbjørnsen, who's playing this week on the PGA Tour, had a great run in the Travelers Championship as an amateur player to finish in the top 5. He won the event. Barry Henson, who plays in the Asian Tour typically, got through in 2nd place. Christian Cavalieri, amateur, got through. And Andrew Svoboda, who's played on the PGA Tour, Canada, Latino America, Corn Ferry Tour. He's a great teaching pro now. He got through in the playoff. Old Chatham Golf Club, Durham, North Carolina. This was a site created basically around the Corn Ferry Tour event that they had in Raleigh that finished up the UNC Health Championship. 76 players, 5 spots, no playoff. Very interesting. Almost always a playoff. No playoff here. Yudo Katsuragawa at 12 under. Patrick Cover, 12 under. Paul Barjon and McClure Meisner and Frankie Kappen all at 11 under those final three guys. And then we had the events from before in Japan and England and Texas. We won't go through all of that all the way, but we'll do the Texas one. 120 players for eight spots. That was on May 22nd. We'll go over those. Carson Young was amazing. I mean, he lit it up. I think he made like nine threes in 13 holes or something in the second round. Austin Ekro, Brent Grant, Paul Haley II, Sergio Garcia, Roger Sloan, and then the playoff survivors were Jacob Solomon and Hank Lebioda. So now we've got the field filled out for the U.S. Open. We've got alternates from each of these sites. So there are two alternates from each of the 13 qualifying sites. They all get thrown together to form the alternate list. That alternate list is kind of formed in secret. The USGA doesn't say who gets what and where and in what order. They just make the list and then start pulling from it. So if for whatever reason there aren't 156 players that between the exemptions and the open spots, by the time we get to Monday, then they'll start filling in with alternates, and then they'll fill in based off of withdrawals from that list. And it's kind of a fun mystery to figure out where they, because they do it based on the ranking of these qualifying sites. So you would assume Columbus would be number one. Then you probably have Dallas maybe number two, maybe the Met number three, but we don't know the formula. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. But worth noting that we've got our field made out. Golf Channel does a great job with this. They've really shined a light on what this day means to so many different people who qualify, whether it's your first time or your 10th time. It means a big deal to get to play in the U.S. Open. And it's truly unique to our game. And it's really cool they've been able to put a spotlight on it. When I was with Golf Channel about 10 years ago now, a little over 10 years ago now, I got to cover Scioto Country Club and Ohio State University for that day. And it was such a wonderful day. It really is cool. If you ever get a chance to be able to go to one of these events, go spend the day, because it really is different than going to a professional golf tournament. You get to spend time just watching players truly grind it out, almost in anonymity. I mean, unless you're at like the Columbus site or the Dallas site, and they know what's on the line, and they live it and they breathe it and they wear it on their sleeve in many cases for that entire day. And then to get to those playoffs, man, that's tense. That's tenser than most playoffs that I've ever seen in person. So congratulations, everybody who got through. Commiserations to everyone who didn't, but congratulations on getting that far. That's still a big deal among 9,500 entrants to whittle yourself down into that sectional / final qualifying stage. That's an accomplishment unto itself. But we've got a field for the U.S. Open. Very excited about that next week. We have the Canadian Open this week, which we talked about. It'll be a little bit of a segue as we kind of wrap up Memorial and get ready for this week's event, which is another national championship, one of the oldest in golf, started in 1904, and the 37th club, which is Oakdale Golf and Country Club, to host the Canadian Open, makes its debut this week as the Canadian Open host. We've known Glen Abbey in the Toronto area. It's hosted the most Canadian Opens with like 30. Royal Montreal is next. It's the only other one in double digits for a tournament that's been going on for 119 years with some stops, right? They didn't play throughout World War I and for 2 years in World War II. They didn't play for 2 years because of the COVID-19 pandemic. Rory McIlroy is going for a three-peat that's been interrupted by the pandemic. Won in 19, didn't play in 20 or 21, won last year. Now gets a new venue to try. We'll see if he can do it. He is the huge, overwhelming favorite this week. 4.5-1, 5-1 in some books, depending on where you're looking. But the field is interesting because you've got a very European-heavy contingent with guys like Tyrrell Hatton, Shane Lowry, Matt Fitzpatrick, Tommy Fleetwood, Justin Rose. They all come to mind immediately as big favorites. If you're a Canadian golf fan, you are hoping that someone like Corey Connors or Adam Hadwin or Mac Hughes or Adam Svensson come through for you and break what's a 7-decade streak of no Canadians having won their national championship. And at least Corey Connors is quite short on the odds board. I think he's 18-1. So kind of in that top 10 of players to win this week. We don't know a whole lot about the venue as Americans. I've never seen it on TV. What I understand, it's a Stanley Thompson design that's put together with another course there, a composite. So 9 of Stanley Thompson and then 9 of the other architect. Apparently relatively large greens, lots of tiers, lots of elevation change. In that regard, somewhat similar to Glen Abbey. So I think you're going to see similar performances from players who have done well there in the past, which might mean good things for Rory McIlroy. But McIlroy was so interesting to bring it back to Memorial because he didn't get the job done. And frankly, he looked like a guy who was absolutely lost with his wedges. Made four bogeys in the final round at Muirfield Village with wedge in hand. And that's inexcusable. I mean, if he plays semi-competent golf with a wedge in hand, he wins the golf tournament. And it was a kind of awkward moment between Jack and Rory McIlroy behind the 72nd hole. Jack has kind of made a thing in recent memory of shaking hands with all kinds of different players. It's an expanding list now of players he shakes hands with in the final groups now, not final group. And Jack said to McIlroy, "We need to talk sometime." And I think the implication there is clear, but it could be about something else. But I'm interpreting it as, we need to talk about your wedge game, man. It is bad. It's really bad. I mean, he has historically been a bad short iron player. And I think one of the biggest reasons is illuminated by what happened at Memorial. And that is, McIlroy is not a great or very comfortable partial wedge shot guy. He loves full bore irons. Loves to hit it as hard as he can. He would rather hit a shorter club farther than a longer club shorter and hit it with less back swing or less energy or less swing speed, whatever you want to call it. It just seems to be his preference. And that gets him into a lot of trouble, particularly with wedges, which you're really never swinging them with a full shot, or at least you shouldn't be. Ben Hogan, I'm going to butcher the quote, but to paraphrase him, basically he said, "I would kill to play somebody who swings wedges at full swing, with full speed." That's not what those clubs are meant to do. They're never meant to be swung full bore. So McIlroy likes doing that, gets him into trouble. And it's got to be frustrating if you're a McIlroy fan. If you're not a McIlroy fan, I guess you're smiling from ear to ear about it. But the driving is better. That's been better. That's been good to see. But otherwise, I think he's trying to make changes in the full swing. They're going in the right direction. And the putting's fine. It is what it is. You don't have to be great. We'll talk about that in a second. But the wedge play for a guy who hits the ball as straight and long as he does is staggering. And it needs to be better, especially if he's going to have any thought of winning at the U.S. Open next week. And I don't think it's going to get better in a week's time. Meanwhile, you've got Scottie Scheffler, who finished second again in a PGA Tour event. He was dead last among the weekend field in strokes gained putting. He gained a record number of strokes tee to green, more than 20 strokes tee to green, something we have seen maybe but one time in the ShotLink era, which goes back to 2003. Vijay Singh did it once about that number range. But the problem for Scheffler is he can't make a putt inside of 10 feet. He lost more than eight strokes putting in four rounds of that tournament. If he had just been semi-competent, if he weren't 65th out of 65 players, he would have won the golf tournament because his ball striking was unbelievable. And he was one shot shy of the playoff in the end, made a really nice Sunday charge from behind, got to 6-under total, and just could not make anything. And if you can't make anything, it's really hard to win. I mean, obviously he's made 72 putts. But all of them basically were inside of 6 feet over the course of the week. Nothing, no kind of significant bomb, nothing even a mid-range birdie. It was pretty bad. And if it's going to be like that, that tells you how great of a ball striker he is. But if he can just figure out something, just something to get your confidence back for 3 days, do the old Vijay Singh trick of lying to yourself and saying you're the best putter in the world. He did that to win a playoff event, 19 years ago, I think it was. Something to that effect. He lied to himself and said, "I'm going to brainwash myself into being believer that I'm the best player in the putter in the world." And he did it, won the golf tournament. I don't know what it's going to take, but if Scheffler can just be marginally better, and I don't mean a whole lot, I mean one or two or three strokes better putting, get a couple of mid-range putts to go in over the course of a tournament, he's going to be a major champion again. He's been playing incredible golf. It's not that he's unbeatable, but he's demonstrating that he has the tee to green game to win anywhere at any time for any reason he wants, unless the putter isn't working. So it'll be interesting to see what that means leading into the U.S. Open. I do want to touch on this briefly since we didn't do a Monday show. But Rose Zhang winning in her professional debut on the LPGA Tour was incredible. It was great television. I'm glad so many people were watching it. She is a household name, I think, because of the Augusta National Women's AM. But she did win consecutive women's NCAA individual Division I national titles. She had done that coming from behind without her best stuff. She makes her debut in this tournament after the best collegiate career, perhaps, of all time. 12 wins and 20 starts. Just an unbelievable career at Stanford. She gets herself in a position to be the leader after 54 holes. She plays basically some of the worst golf on the golf course on Sunday, but manages her game well enough to get into a playoff with Jennifer Kupcho. Saves her absolute best approach shot, maybe her best shot of the day, for last. Hits a great hybrid after really mangling the 18th hole a couple of different times, but surviving once in regulation, once in a playoff, third time of asking. The hybrid gets to, what, 6-7 feet. Jennifer Kupcho can't find the green, or she does find the green, but puts it off the green with a, frankly, terrible putt. But ultimately, that was good enough for Rose Zhang to two-putt very comfortably, win the golf tournament. She wins in her first professional start. That's the first time someone has won on the LPGA Tour in their professional debut since 1951. Beverly Hansen did it, and she had won as an amateur already on the LPGA in their first season in 1950. So this is a truly historic occasion. Yes, there have been players who have won as amateurs. Lydia Ko won the Canadian Open twice in a row as an amateur 10 years ago. Pretty incredible stuff. Atalia Titikun, who played with her, Zhang, in the final group, has been number one in the world. They're the same age. So there are young players who have accomplished incredible things without necessarily doing what Rose Zhang did, but puts her already in some pretty amazing company. She's 62nd in the world from 1 week of being a professional golfer. She's in the top 15 on the LPGA's money list. She earns tons of points in the CME Group Tour Championship. She's cemented her status in there, which means she now has access to the biggest individual prize in women's golf at the end of the year. Really incredible stuff. We don't want to get the hype train running too quickly because there's going to be ups and downs in golf. But for her to come out, turn pro, and win an inaugural event, it's a pretty darn good field. That's impressive stuff, and I think everyone should know about it. So hopefully next time we see Rose Zhang to be in a major championship, hopefully there will be a lot more people paying attention because they should have their eyes on this player. She's really incredible. That's going to do it for us today on Two at the First. Thanks so much for spending some time with us today. If you catch us as a podcast, and you can do so, leave a 5-star review and a comment. Help us reach more people with the show. If you're watching on YouTube, thanks for doing that. Consider subscribing to our channel and smash that like button. Leave a comment. Happy to get back to you on anything you want to ask or talk about. And if you're watching or listening through some other fashion, thanks for spending some part of your day with us. We'll be back tomorrow with another show, and we'll go over getting ready for the Canadian Open. We've got the Scandinavian Mixed, which we'll talk about a little bit on the DP World Tour and the Ladies European Tour. So much golf to get to, and we're getting into the US Open. So much more to come. I'm Ryan Ballingy. Thank you for watching or listening, and we will talk to you tomorrow.